Good morning, this is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. The history of the Hmong people in Wisconsin goes back to 1975, when thousands of them were resettled in the United States after they aided U.S. troops during the Vietnam War. Many Hmong landed in cities like Milwaukee, Green Bay, and Wausau. The Hmong are, in fact, the largest Asian minority in the state. In cities like Wausau, they represent more than 11% of the total population. But although many Hmong have lived here for generations, they continue to face discrimination. After 40 years in the area, many people continue to think of them as refugees and treat them like outsiders. Reporter Duahali Saikautau knows exactly what it's like to be both Hmong and American. She was born in Laos, but was raised in Texas and even spent some time in Wausau. Saikautau spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about her recent article in The Atlantic, which profiles Hmong experiences in Wausau.
So The Atlantic actually contacted me and asked me if I was interested in doing a story about, immigrants and refugees. They told me about their project. But it happened that I was in Wausau, Wisconsin, as an intern at the local newspaper 22 years ago. So it was just a real opportunity because I thought, I had not gone back to Wausau since I had left as an intern, and I wanted to go back and see how has this town changed. And my time there was not a good time. And it was a time when I was actually drawn to Wausau because of this Atlantic piece that actually was published back in 1994. So, the whole thing was kind of a strange turn.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that piece.
So when I was in college in upstate New York, I read this article in The Atlantic by this writer, Roy Beck, and he basically described this town as a place that was a paradise for natives. And suddenly these foreigners came in and, they were going to take over the town. And here are some of the problems that the town, the natives had had. So I thought, what an article. It's almost an opinion piece, but it wasn't. So the very next summer, I arrived into the same city to find out for myself what the city was about. And it wasn't a good experience. Even when I was just jogging around town, people would drive by and, actually shout out, "Go back to where you came from." Or I would go on to particular assignments and people would treat me pretty badly. There were just so many memories that really left me feeling like this wasn't a place that I would want to grow up. And I left and didn't look back. And now suddenly I'm spending a couple of weekends there and, learning more about how the town has changed and its people.
That was the early 90s. You don't expect that kind of behavior. And it seems like something out of the civil rights era. I mean, how common were these kinds of stories and these incidents?
During that period, it was very common and extremely ugly and really intolerable for those who had just arrived from a different country, but also a real challenge for those who were not used to this group of people, right? The Hmong did not know how to read or write. They weren't trained in particular skills or had, what locals would have considered skills that would have been used as a local worker, for example. They didn't speak English. So it was really, really difficult. But, the truth is that for refugees and immigrants who are either newly arrived or who've only been here for, let's say, a decade, they feel and they experience the world in such a different way that for many of them, it is like the 60s because they don't understand what's happening and people do treat them poorly. People have done horrible things because they can, because people aren't going to report it. People aren't going to, speak up because A, they can't. They don't know the rules. They don't know what's legal and what's illegal. So even today, when I went back to Wausau, I spoke to a lot of people who told me that discrimination is very real. And of course, Wisconsin is very much a fishing, hunting, outdoors kind of a place. And it's a wonderful place for so many people. But there are areas in Wisconsin where Hmong say they will never venture into. It's just too dangerous.
Let's take a step back for a moment and let's talk about how the Hmong ended up in Wausau to begin with.
So, you know, the Hmong experience in the U.S. goes back all the way before the fall of Saigon. 40 years ago, this year, in fact, is when the first Hmong arrived into central Wisconsin. And the family that I write about in this Atlantic piece, they were one of the first families that arrived on this particular plane, five members of a family came, and that's when the migration began. And it was, you know, simply from a Lutheran church that brought them over, and then that grew. And as more churches and more refugee agencies were able to kind of work with the community to kind of bring in others, you know, more people came along. And so a few hundred, a few thousand. And right now, the Wausau population in terms of the Hmong, it's about 12%.
Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Hmong people's work with the U.S. during the Vietnam War?
The Hmong were, as the French called them, montagnards, mountain people, people who lived in very remote areas in Laos. And in fact, the Hmong are nomadic people who never had a country. They never belonged or were citizens of a particular place. So they can be found in China, Burma, Thailand, Vietnam, and of course, Laos. And during the Vietnam War, the U.S., via the CIA, came through Laos and said, okay, we need help. You know, who can we get? And they had worked with a number of different groups until they finally found the Hmong, who were essentially the most remote of the population. And they said, you know, we need help to do this. And I mean, I've seen actual CIA videos of when the planes would come through and drop supplies and drop, you know, weapons and drop food to the villagers. And they essentially said, okay, we're going to train you. And this is what we need in return. In exchange for your help, we need this. And tens of thousands of Hmong young men and boys, armed with guns, went and helped Americans and helped them fight the communist in Vietnam, the Viet Cong, and of course the communist in Laos. So that was a long history and a hidden history for Americans until really just in the last few decades where people were more open and more able to actually discuss or tell these stories. So that's a little bit of what happened. And, you know, we just don't know how many Americans' lives were saved, but we do know that tens of thousands of Hmong actually died trying to help Americans. But then because so many Americans did not know the role that the Hmong played, many of them didn't understand who these people were and why should we bring them over. So to this day, because this history is not told as part of the Vietnam era, you have essentially a non-existent part of these people's history that sort of invalidate who they are. So to many Americans, they're just another immigrant group trying to make ends meet and trying to pursue a different life. But the fact is that if the Hmong were to return to Laos, their safety is still at risk.
So you come back to Wausau 22 years later. And what does this community look like now?
It's been slow progress. The truth is that there have been some wonderful achievements and so much to be proud of. But the reality is that there are still many people who basically are ghettoized, live in certain communities, kind of congregate in certain neighborhoods, and who you're not going to see, you know, on a Friday night eating fish fry and enjoying a night out with locals at a baseball game. Those are the minority. That's just the reality. And the next generation, and we're talking about those who were born in Wausau, they are today looking back and trying to figure out, like, is this my town? Like, can I claim this space as, you know, yeah, I'm proudly from Wausau. That's why this Dylan Yang case is an eye-opener for many people, because the locals in Wausau, they probably were thinking, yeah, you know, the Hmong have come a long way. You know, they've got houses now. They have good jobs. They have good cars, good homes. Yet, like, why are they demonstrating about this kid and what's happened here? And why are they sort of calling the race card? What's going on here? And the truth is that there are many people in the community, Hmong, who feel that they are second-class citizens. And so there's a disconnect between what, you know, officials and what those who are making decisions for the city think and what those who are in their private homes believe.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about what happened with Dylan Yang and that story.
Dylan is a 16-year-old boy who is currently awaiting sentencing for a crime that he committed last year. He was home with a friend, and a group of boys came over armed. One of them used what later turned out to be a BB gun, but to Dylan, who was then 15, he thought it was a gun. And he went to his kitchen, brought back a very large knife, saw his friend already in a fight with the group of boys, and he went to essentially, you know, help his friend. And what he did was he stabbed a 13-year-old boy in the back, and that boy, who is black, died. And so the case, it went to trial, and in the spring he was tried as an adult and he could face life in prison. And what Hmong people are saying in Wausau is, why, first of all, was he charged as an adult? And two, could they not have considered that there was a history of bullying, so much so that the boy actually asked to be transferred to a different middle school? But apparently the judge was very clear about what kind of evidence should be, you know, produced in the trial. And the outcome is that he was found guilty. And people are wondering, well, maybe if he wasn't labeled in media depictions as a gang member, maybe he wouldn't have been found guilty. So, and there are other cases of teenagers in Wisconsin who have killed and have gotten a very different sentence.
It seems like the perception that a lot of the Hmong are gang members has persisted throughout their time in Wausau. You know, what kind of misperceptions do we continue to see about the Hmong?
Especially with children of refugees or immigrants, this is very common. There is a sense that, you know, these kids, and particularly boys, they're trying to figure out, you know, where they belong. So they tend to kind of hang out with, you know, a group of young men, a group of young boys. And what does that mean? So in certain cities like LA or, you know, certain places around the country, they are part of gangs, right? But in this particular city, the Asian gangs have not been a part of this, the history of this city, for a long time. And so, you know, even the police chief said this wasn't gang related, although there have been other police officials who said there were gang elements to this. And so the question is, was Dylan Yang a gang member, and did he do something because of his gang affiliation, that kind of a thing? But I have interviewed so many people, you know, over 25 people who either went to school with Dylan or who were related to Dylan. And this was not a kid who was in a gang. This was a kid who, even though he was born in Wausau, his English was limited. He was trying to, you know, figure out where he belonged. He listened to a lot of, you know, music, country music, like love songs. You know, just he did things that clearly showed that he wasn't. I mean, he came home every night. He talked to his mom. He asked for permission to leave. He did all these things that would be just so very opposite of what we think of as gangs. And the problem is that so many outsiders, if you're dark-skinned, dark-haired, and you kind of hang out, you know, together on a block, that signifies something, and it signifies trouble, it signifies danger, and that's unfortunately the stereotype of what, in particular, boys are grouped as. And along that comes other connotations that, in the legal system, can lead to a very different outcome.
Why do we see these kinds of racial divides continue in a city like Wausau through generations?
Well, Wausau is unique in that it is this beautiful city where, you know, life is a bit slower than, say, the Twin Cities or Madison or other larger cities. So there's this quaint kind of rural feel about it. And I think for the Hmong, it's been hard for them to be seen differently because of their history there. And I think part of it is simply that people have a really hard time seeing people who look different from them and who may follow different cultural customs or traditions. And so there is just a feeling of it is still us versus them because they do things that we wouldn't normally do. Some of them still do shamanistic rituals and sacrifice a chicken or a particular animal, you know, for the spirits and for their ancestors. And, you know, ordinary Americans might find that a little bit off-putting. I think it's just simply a matter of, can we go to dinner and sit side by side with our neighbors? And the hard truth is that many people don't. I think for me, it's not about academic teachings or panel discussions or forums that bring people together to kind of do this, although that does help. But it really is just the very simple act of saying, hey, you know, do you want to go fishing with me? Hey, do you want to come over to my house and have a beer? Do you want to come hang out one night and just watch football? And those simple acts, I think, can really change how different people view each other. It's just that simple. If people really took the time to understand the sacrifices that the Hmong made in terms of giving up their land, giving up, you know, their loved ones, then maybe they wouldn't be so quick to condemn this group.
Well, Duahali Saikautau, thank you so much for speaking with me.
You're welcome.
Duahali Saikautau is a reporter for Minnesota Public Radio. Her article is called To Be Both Midwestern and Hmong, and it was featured on The Atlantic's website as part of their series called City Makers, New Hometowns, profiles of different immigrant communities in the United States. You can find out more at wuwm.com.